Chapter 4, Understanding of Love. With his arms folded, Kakodaz waited for his teacher in front of the school, because he wanted to show him Bolmer, the city on the shore. He was loitering in front of the school building when he noticed Yuremia watching him with a smile. Whenever he looked in her direction, she quickly turned her head to the side and continued talking to one of her friends. Rado came out of the building and asked, "Well, kid, ready for a trip?"
"Yeah, sure.
I'm looking forward to it."
"Fine. Today I also have a little more time and first we'll take the train to Metro. This, as you can imagine, is the center of Bolmer."
They got on the train and were not traveling long when Mr. Pertoriza said, "We're already there." They left the train, walked to the surface, and Joliad spotted huge buildings and many foxes, but also other anthros, rabbits, horses, cats, and other species. The non-Aramarans were clearly outnumbered and the student could not remember ever seeing any of them.
"Who are they?"
he asked, both amazed and confused.
"This is the heart of Bolmer and as I'm sure you can understand, other nations want to trade with our land. There are also tourists here. They all come from far away, just to have been here. You see, Bolmer is very beautiful and has a lot to offer. The nightlife is very great," the teacher explained.
"I've never seen any hybrids other than foxes and wolves," his student confessed to him, glancing around. Rado smiled and only said that he was not surprised. After all, Joliad lived in Lado and that was the province. "You will see many new things here, little one. By the way, over there is the nerve center of our whole empire," Rado said, pointing to an incredibly tall, brilliant white building that was built as a narrow tower. "That's where Carteron sits. Sometimes a few more Jukans and Jaggers, too.
Impressive, isn't it?"
"Wow, how high might that be?"
"I think when you jump down, it takes a while to get to the bottom. All these buildings were painted with a special paint that reacts with the air and the sun to provide lighting energy.
Pretty cool, right?"
taught Rado.
"And that is also where the origin of Aramaria is. The Ispasetka, that is, the place where Aram and Arya lived?"
"Exactly,"
agreed Pertoriza. "In the basement vault is supposed to be their cave. The building was simply built around it. However, few foxes have ever seen this point of origin. It is a secret. I, however, believe that there are very different things going on there, but I don't want to overwhelm you with my conspiracy theories."
In amazement, Kakodaz kept seeing hybrids going into buildings with big windows and coming out with all kinds of things. They behaved like ants, somehow structured, although everything seemed like a hopeless mess. One could hardly follow an individual with the eyes without losing him again.
"What are they doing?" wanted Joliad to know.
"They provide themselves with things they would like to have. They go shopping.
That's what they call it," Pertoriza grinned.
"Come on, let's go inside too."
They went to a house where various fruits, spices and other foods were displayed. A lot of home cooking was offered. It was very crowded and everyone was talking in confusion.
"But I don't have any Letvari. You need them here in Bolmer, don't you?"
asked Joliad.
"Yeah, sure, kid. The Letvari is something like a barter currency and is only valid here in Bolmer. It doesn't work that way here, one potato for 3 carrots. The tourists want to be able to pay with hard currency. We're not in the country here.
That's called consumption, my boy." The teacher rejoiced, seeming quite fascinated and as if in a trance. Joliad looked up at him, somehow he seemed changed, as if under some kind of drug. His eyes were wide open, psychotic.
"This is terrible.
Let's go, Rado, please," he begged.
"Okay, kid, you're right. It's too crowded here anyway. I can tell you can't deal with it."
"No, I think the traditional system is better. I don't like those crowds and the hustle and bustle, and I can't do anything with money." After a while, the two foxes sat down on a bench that stood by a fountain. In the middle of it rose the sculpture of a male fox. He was unclothed, muscular and looked seriously at the sky. His majestic gaze seemed to pierce imposingly through the clouds and on the pedestal was a golden sign that read Per Aspera ad Astra.
Per Aspera ad Astra.
Latin. Through the rough to the stars.
What does that mean, Rado?
The young fox wanted to know.
Latin, right. a very ancient language of the people we intercepted. For all we know, they rarely use it now. When night falls and there are no clouds, you can see that this fox is looking directly toward Gaja. You can't see it itself from here, but you can see the sun that goes with it. But what is this statue trying to tell us? Why does he look so serious? Well, that's obviously up to each person to judge. To me, the guy there seems rather thoughtful and observant, almost watchful. Here's to people never daring to come here. I see. Just as the god Ephraim had prophesied to Arya? Asked Kakodaz. I realize you do know something. I'm almost impressed, the teacher praised. Why yes, that's right. Do you know who this handsome male is? His teacher further tested the student's knowledge. Carteron? The latter guessed, eliciting a broad grin from Rotto. No, my boy. That there is a fox that doesn't even exist. He's called Fox McCloud. Some artist gave him to the city many, many years ago. Radovan looks a lot like him, though. What does he tell you? Joliad had never heard the name Fox McCloud before and briefly wondered what it meant to him. However, he could not make any sense of it. Probably nothing, he thought, and left it at that. I have no idea. Maybe he's looking out for all of us? He said. That's possible. Maybe more about that later. We've seen enough undressed males for today. Let's move on. Rotto and his student drove through the various districts of Bolmer, getting off again and again for a few sights before they came to a huge lake. It stretched to the horizon and seemed to know no end. It was such a deep blue that one would believe it was a reflection of the sky. Small waves hit the shore. It was strangely quiet and relaxing here. For a few moments the two foxes stood there and looked into the distance. As if controlled by a foreign hand, they investigated the distance and the boy noticed that it was almost impossible for him to move or make a sound. But it was not as if he had been paralyzed. He simply did not want to spoil this infinite, peaceful silence. Suddenly the teacher's voice cut the silence, "This is Agnes of Edo, the glittering lake. It is almost half the size of the built-up area of Bolmer itself," he said. "I have heard about the two lakes on the borders of the capital, but I have never seen them. I had no idea how beautiful they are," Joliad said, to which his mentor asked him, "And what have you heard specifically about Agnes of Edo?" For a moment Kakodaz thought. Aram and Arya lived together very happily for a long time. As their first puppy, Arya got Banato, a son who was much more wolfish than his siblings. He was the first Jagger of Banatarija. When Aram died of old age, Banato took his place as the firstborn son, and Arya reportedly cried for many years, so much did she miss Aram. She cried so much that it became Agnes of Edo. You say Banato took the place of his father? Do you know what that means in our culture to this day? The teacher asked, eager to hear the answer. No, Joliad admitted. Rotto explained, well, Rotto von Carteron, our leader, is a direct descendant of Aram and Arya. Before him, his father led this country. Always, even in the times of the Republic, descendants of our two gods controlled our destinies. I see. Your mother is the one in your family circle who is in charge. She is the leader, so she is something like a leading wolf, right? Joliad nodded. And your father is the one who feeds the family and keeps it alive. He is the driver. The leader of Aramaria combines these two tasks. So if a father dies, the component that feeds the family breaks down. Therefore, if your father were to pass away, your mother would be oriented to you and give you your father's tasks so that your clan could continue to exist. You would then be the one to guide the family. However, this would include witnessing new pups, if that were necessary. This, in turn, is a primal instinct that we have not discarded to this day. Oh, nonsense! Interrupted Joliad cheekily. But Rotto continued to speak calmly, it is so, believe me. You would have to give your mother new puppies. No one else would be allowed to do that, except you as the firstborn. That's bullshit. The boy ruled. Do you know what love is, my boy? And please don't give me love for mommy or anything like that. I mean love that can be anything, would do anything. Love that can be capable of breaking laws, with all the consequences. Love that does all the things that are necessary, no matter what others think of it. You have no idea about sexuality, females, males, the relationship to each other.
No, I have no idea.
Sorry.
It seemed like Pertoriza was a little upset, because he suddenly said, I'd say let's call it a day. I'll take you back to school and then I'll go back home too. I'm sure my wife and kids are waiting for me.
Hey, the young fox began, if I said something wrong.
No, it's all right. I need to slowly get home, that's all.
Get together with some people from your class and get to know them better. They're celebrating today.
Tomorrow after sunrise, we'll continue on the theme of Per Aspera ad Astra.
We'll revisit this sometime when you're a little more mature.
Kakodaz sighed and later realized that his teacher hadn't said another word the whole way to the train.
What was it that had made him so angry?
Joliad's ignorance or the fact that he had been so forward?
The young fox would have liked to apologize, but he didn't dare say a word until his teacher initiated contact.
The males got back on the train to Tikvo. It was already nightfall when Joliad got off the train and he and Rado hugged and said goodbye.
Don't think so much anymore. You didn't do anything wrong.
See you tomorrow, kid.
See you tomorrow, Rado.
And thank you.
It was very instructive.
I'm sorry for being so forward.
It won't happen again, I promise, Joliad apologized.
As the door of the train began to close, Pertoriza quickly called out, Don't worry, Joliad, you too will meet your destiny when you're a little more grown up.
What?
The young fox asked, caught off guard. But it was already too late, his teacher waved, and the train left. Joliad thoughtfully went back to school.
What was that supposed to mean, his destiny?
Destined for what?
What was his teacher trying to tell him?
Adult?
Wasn't he already?
His thoughts were interrupted by voices coming from the garden behind the building. The male quickly realized that the celebration must be taking place there, but that was rather nothing for him, so he was going to enter the building to go to sleep.
Suddenly someone shouted, Joliad!
Come on, let's celebrate the new school year.
What?
He asked, turning around.
Then Yeremia came up to him and smiled, Come, you must meet the others.
Then, when the vixen stood in front of him, she said softly, We've been waiting for you, gave him a kiss in a flash, and ran back into the garden.
Kakodaz's chaps quivered as he looked her over. She was wearing a beautiful red dress, and something in Kako told him that what he was tasting and feeling now was what he had always wanted.
One of his instincts was awakened. He picked up her scent and was suddenly completely infatuated with her.
Whatever the meaning of what this fox had done.
This feels strange.
Why did she do that?
He thought and ran into the garden as well.
The students had lit a big bonfire. There had to be about 60 people at the party and loud, traditional music sweetened their evening.
Yeremia and Letania had sat down at one of the many tables.
Yeremia beckoned Joliad to join her and he walked up to the girls.
The girls whispered and when the male stood in front of them, Letania had already stood up.
She smiled and said, I'm going to go powder my nose.
See you.
Kakodaz sat down opposite Yeremia and felt his heart beating strongly.
Hello Joliad.
Isn't it a beautiful evening?
She asked sweetly, but only a hoarse yes came over the boy's lips.
Loosen up.
I won't bite, the vixen said, smiling again.
Then she turned her gaze to a makeshift bar and called out, Hey, Chucky.
Get us two ready.
This Chucky behind the bar nodded and Yeremia turned back to her interlocutor, So, what brings you here, mysterious stranger?
Well, I was informed in writing that I was to come to this school to participate in the final year of teaching.
Okay, we know that much.
What was your strongest area in basic training?
I've always been good at linguistics, philosophy and a few other subjects.
I can remember a lot of things very quickly.
But what tipped the scales to send me here, I don't know.
I also don't know how Carteron came to assign this to me.
After all, I don't even know him.
What about you?
What my strong subject is?
Let's say I want to be an aerospace engineer.
That sounds very good and comprehensive.
Suitable for our current topic in school, noted the male.
Well, that's why I'm here.
I was wanted?
Carteron knows all the foxes, believe me.
It's a little too complicated to explain to you.
But the fact is that he is and will always be informed of our accomplishments. He trusts you to be able to make an important contribution to our society, perhaps in the future, Yeremia explained. Whoever this Carteron must have been, he obviously knew a lot, which seemed a bit creepy to Juliad. Was he being watched? Chucky came and placed two large pitchers on the table, saying enjoy, and left again. That looks good. What kind of a drink is it? Wanted to know Kakodaz. Is there alcohol in it? The vixen laughed as the male quickly took an oversized gulp and choked on it. Slow down. We've got time. And, yes, there's a lot of alcohol in it. It's copaic. It's made from copaicas that grow everywhere around here. Chucky always brews up something nice there. It tastes very sweet and I can't get enough of it once I start. When Joliad recovered, he anxiously asked, are we allowed to drink alcohol here? Yes, why not? After all, I'm already 20, so I'm an adult, and you're? Oh yes, 16. Then everything's okay. As long as we're back on time tomorrow when Rado shows up, it's not a problem. After all, this is our celebration of the beginning of the apprenticeship year, she explained to her shy friend. It tastes really delicious. I've never drank it before, the latter then said and took another sip. He watched as Yeremia emptied the jug in one go, swallowing loudly. Afterwards, with seeming naturalness, she wiped her muzzle with a loud sigh, which left Juliad looking stunned. He got wide-eyed and then said, but, you said we had time? Again, Yeremia smiled and jumped up. Come with me. I have something to show you, she said. She grabbed the male's arm, who didn't understand at first, but then got up too. He quickly took another big gulp and followed her. The sweet, burning taste of the drink flowed down his throat and somehow, he felt a little woozy. He only hoped Yeremia wouldn't notice. Where are you going all of a sudden? And why so fast? He shouted as Yeremia seemed to be dragging him behind her. A few steps from away the garden, she suddenly fell down on the grass, pulling the boy down with her. Both were out of breath and laughing, lying side by side and looking up at the night sky. There seemed to be thousands of stars visible and just today, on this balmy evening, Joliad noticed for the first time how beautiful this universe was in which they all lived. This infinite expanse and the stars in it, which made their way unstoppably and in an incomprehensible eternity, had always fascinated him. The music from the party was barely audible and the vixen said softly, I often lie down here at night and look at the stars when I'm not tired yet. Yes, I can understand that, Joliad agreed, it's beautiful. I like it a lot, too. Do you think we will fly to the stars one day, Joliad? You might become an engineer. So you're going to have to work hard to make that happen. I certainly hope so, because if what Rado said is true, we may eventually have no choice but to let at least a few of us find a second home. I'd like to go on a spaceship, Yeremia sighed and started fooling around, hum, hum, toot, toot. She went, wiggling her arms. When the boy asked her if the drink could be working yet, she giggled, a little, hee hee. I feel the same way, the male admitted. Where did you learn to drink like that? Well, sweetie, I'm just a real bottle baby. She slurred. Had she just said sweetie to him? Would she still remember that tomorrow? But Kakodaz rather imagined that it must have been a slip on her part, and also forgot it again quite quickly. After all, she was drunk, as was he. Surely it was all in good fun. The two lay in the grass for quite a while, talking about their childhood and what they wanted to do with their lives later. At some point the music in the garden stopped and Yeremia jumped up, we have to go back. Lockdown. The foxes quickly ran back and went into the school building. A teacher was already standing in the entrance, scowling. Now march to the rooms. Lights out. She shouted, squawking sternly. As Joliad and Yeremia stood between their adjoining rooms, the vixen said, thank you for a fun evening, and gently took the male in her arms. She gave him a gentle kiss on the lips and then went to her room, while Kakodaz looked after her, fascinated, sighed and finally wanted to go to sleep too. Another kiss. It was a pity that she would probably not remember it tomorrow. Was she just playing with him? Was she even serious about what she did? It was Joliad's first night here and he had never slept in any other place than at home or with his wolfish friend in Seligico. This already scared him a little, which is why he didn't worry about the thing with Yeremia anymore. He took off his clothes and lay down on the couch, dressed only in his fur, as foxes did. He lay awake for quite a while and could not fall asleep, so he took his book out of his bag and continued reading the story Time Fox. It was about a fox who was the leader of a crew and lived with them on a spaceship in space. It was Joliad's favorite book, although the content was not always easy to follow. There was a lot of shooting around in it, and fantastic technology was used. Oddly enough, some of the inventions in this book were transferred to the real world over time, as if the author had been able to see into the future. In any case, Joliad could certainly pass the time until fatigue set in with this material. The male had already read a few pages when he noticed that someone was prowling outside his door. He thought it must be that stern lady, so he quickly turned off the light, whispering, "Lights out." He tucked the book under his pillow and pretended to be asleep. Only the moonlight illuminated the room a little. Suddenly he heard his door open and someone quietly entered the room. The door closed again and footsteps approached the bed. The fox didn't move, because somehow the quiet noises seemed so scary to him that he was scared to open his eyes. All of a sudden, it was very quiet. Joliad felt a body lie down next to his and cover himself with part of his blanket. His heart was beating up to his throat and he couldn't move because of fear, when a strange arm wrapped around him and a hand began to slowly and gently stroke his chest fur. The boy felt a warm breath on the back of his neck and swallowed when suddenly Eremia's voice sounded very softly, "Are you still awake?" Joliad was startled, turned his head to her and looked wide-eyed into her smiling face. "What are you doing here?" he asked and his fear suddenly vanished. "I couldn't sleep. It's very lonely in this big, dark room." "But you're going to get in trouble." "No, what am I talking about? We'll get in trouble if they see us here like this," he whispered crossly. "Oh, the old woman is already in bed. I'm sure she's already hung back on her bottle of Copaic and is sleeping peacefully," Eremia reassured Kakodaz, who turned back onto his side. "All right, but only tonight and only because I believe you that you were lonely." Wordlessly, the vixen stroked the male's chest again, who now grinned and closed his eyes full of well-being. He sighed loudly as Eremia's hand moved from his chest to his arm, patting it gently and massaging it slowly. From his shoulder she slid to his pelvis and the younger man noted her deepening breathing. Her delicate fingertips felt so incredibly good. Never before had someone touched him so gently and lovingly. "Please turn on your back, Joliad," the vixen now asked. Joliad already suspected what she was up to, but followed her wish and then turned his head towards her. "What are you doing?" he asked with a smile. "Let me admire your beauty and just enjoy it. You don't have to do anything but just let it happen." Eremia seemed very aroused and began to fondle the male's thighs. Then she gave him a long, gentle kiss on the lips. Instinctively, Joliad returned the kiss and intensified it, with both of them then using their tongues. A soft moan from Eremia told him that she was enjoying it very much. Kakodaz could not believe the situation right now. He was in bed with a vixen who was experienced and good-looking at the same time and had chosen him to have fun with. That was unbelievable. But he was a little scared. How would it feel and what did he have to do? What if it would all be over too quickly? And what if? "Put aside the doubts and bad thoughts, sweetie," Eremia said, as if she knew how he felt. The moon continued to wander as the bedspread moved in its light, first frantically and then more and more steadily, before Joliad pulled his head back out from under it and gasped for air. "Oh, Eremia," he panted, "that was amazing. So beautiful. I have to breathe first." "Yes, it was very nice," she grinned, leaning contentedly against his chest. "Was it your first time, Joliad?" "Yes. I hope it wasn't over too fast." "It's all good, sweetie. It's natural that this didn't take forever now. You are very tender, not a daredevil, I like that." The male understood immediately and smiled contentedly as he slowly regained his breath. Eremia stroked his chest again as he asked, "And how can I make you happy now?" The female grinned and gave him a gentle kiss. "It's all right, Joliad. I am satisfied. And I have to tell you, you've got quite something going for you. You understand, right?" "I think so. I'm glad you liked it. At first, I thought it wasn't going to be anything. I'm sure my performance wasn't that great, though." "You're just saying that now, aren't you?" "I don't mean your performance, but that down there, silly," she said, reaching under the blanket between his legs. Now he sleeps in a soft coat of fox fur.
Yes, Kakodaz grinned. You are a great male. And for the first time, your little friend did very well, the vixen praised. The way you looked when you climaxed, just cute.
Delightfully beautiful? She sighed in delight. Then a short pause arose, during which the two cuddled and caressed each other. When the feeling of this ultimate climax that had just been achieved had subsided, Yuremia told the younger man, Joliad, you are a man now.
I mean fully.
What do you mean?
You've had sex now.
And that means you're not a silly little boy anymore. This is going to be a big upheaval for you.
I already had something with a male, but I'm glad I got to deflower you, she grinned.
Again, a pause arose, in which they kissed intimately. This time, Joliad liked the kiss of his new friend even more than all the previous ones. He noticed a feeling of affection and happiness emanating from it and shared it, deep inside. This happened fully automatically, without either of them having to say anything more.
What will become of us now? How do we relate to each other now?
Kaka wanted to know.
I want to be with you very much.
I'm not the type who wants to lay as many women as possible. I immediately sensed that you liked me. And when you gave me that kiss in the garden, I was hooked.
Yuremia smiled with satisfaction, let's wait and see what happens next.
As long as you want me by your side, I will be there.
But it doesn't just depend on my will, he indicated.
Yes, but that's how it is, Joliad, she began to enlighten him. For as you know, a man is entitled to take as many wives as he likes. There will surely come a time when you will feel like making another acquaintance. It's a natural law, sweetie.
Kakodaz thought, actually, he didn't want another vixen, only Yuremia.
Would that change and she would be right? Why would he ever love another?
If you look at it from a reproductive point of view, yes.
But we are not animals, we are civilized.
Let's just be together and make love whenever we feel like it.
So if someone comes on to you, tell them you have a nice male dog that you're very happy with.
Because I would love to make you happy, not only in bed, he vowed.
That sounds nice.
I want to do a lot more of it and I would be able to show you a lot.
You'll get more persistent, harder, kinkier. The way I like it best.
Astonished, Kakodaz then said, I never thought you could speak like that.
Well, Kako, that's just the language of love, his girlfriend agreed.
There are other, less sexual ways in which love can speak, but I like the horny one best, hee hee.
Ah, I see. That means I can still learn a lot from you?
Yes, today was just one of the lessons for good sex. There are many more. In our society, most of it is not taboo, as you know.
Fortunately, because it was different under other leaders.
Today it's more relaxed, you know.
I see. But do you want to have puppies someday?
Oh yes.
Many, if I can.
But only when the training is over and I finally have my own apartment and no longer have to live with my father.
Let's see what happens, Yuremia said, and they kissed again intensely.
Okay, my sweet lover. I should slowly go back over to my room.
It won't be long before the sun comes up, said Kakodaz's new girlfriend.
Yes, and when the sun rises, he agreed, our Rado is not far away.
Maybe that's why he's called that.
They got up from the bed together and went to the door. There they stopped for a moment and looked into each other's eyes. The male looked deeply into those emeralds that sparkled in the moonlight and shone happily and contentedly. He would have loved to gaze into them for the rest of the night. Unexpectedly, the vixen grabbed her boyfriend's crotch once again and whispered, I guess you won't be able to sleep just yet, sweetie. Say hello to your friend for me if you ever get him out to play again.
Do you think I would do something like that?
He asked mischievously.
Yeah, I guess so, because you're a male, after all, and they do that sometimes, she grinned, and they both gave each other another goodbye kiss.
Good night, sweetie.
Good night, Joliad.
Have fun, she winked at him and went to her room, after which Joliad closed the door again. He settled back into bed and didn't take long to get his well-deserved sleep. Meanwhile, he dreamed of a green meadow, whose large stalks swayed in the wind and rustled softly. It seemed to be a warm summer day and the sun was shining brightly from the sky. The fox was lying in the middle of the grass,
looking up at the cloudless sky, when suddenly he heard a voice, "Hello, Joliad." Kako was startled and quickly stood up. "Who is there? Where am I?" he asked hastily. "I am Arya," said the voice, and suddenly a large, four-legged she-wolf emerged from among the stalks.
"You
are Mother Arya," remarked Joliad, confused. "Yes, I am. I have watched you and I know that you are now a man. That's why I want to give you a gift," the she-wolf explained. Joliad pondered and looked at this creature. Arya had very beautiful silvery shiny fur, which shimmered in the sunlight. She seemed to be someone who was always smiling and always very calm and conscientious about what she wanted. "This is a dream, isn't it?" he asked incredulously. "Call it a dream or else a connection to the origin that any Aramaran can experience if they are worthy. But first let's get to your gift, Joliad."
"What kind of gift, mother?"
"As a man, you need some realization," she said, raising her paw, whereupon everything around them turned to white light and disappeared. The male found himself in a stone foxhole, looking at a schematic picture painted on a rock wall.
"What is this place?"
he wondered, thinking how he recognized a fox and two wolves in the picture. The fox there was apparently lying on the ground bleeding, and the two wolves seemed to be arguing or shouting at each other. What was this, and why was he, Kakodaz, here at all? Suddenly, the Aramaran mother reappeared beside him and declared, "That she-wolf there is me."
"And who's the other wolf there?"
"This is not a simple wolf, Joliad. This is my first son, Banido. And he was the first Aramaran to exist," Arya explained. "Yes, they say he looked more wolfish than the other pups, how he had more of you, his mother, in his genes," Joliad reflected. "Yes, that's right. You're looking at a scene from over 2,000 years ago. Why are you yelling at each other? And why is there a dead fox lying there?"
"He's dead, isn't he?"
asked the Aramaran. "You'll understand when you're ready to listen, Joliad," Arya admonished. "Banito and I were not only arguing, but he had killed Aram."
"What?"
exclaimed Joliad in horror. "I thought Aram had died of old age."
"No," Arya explained, "Banito killed him to make me his vixen.
But that's. I thought it was because, as the firstborn, he would have become your husband after Aram's death anyway."
"That is also true.
However, Banito did not want to wait. At first, I cried for a long, long time," the Aramaran mother continued.
"Agnes Avito," interjected Kakodaz.
"Yes, that's what you call the lake today. Anyway, at some point I had no strength to resist his rapes," Arya said, tears in her eyes.
"What, he?
But, he was your son," screamed the fox, for anger was seething inside him, but he grudgingly tried to keep calm.
"Yes, but something was wrong with him. He was disturbed and mistreated me over and over again. At some point, I realized that the new civilization would not be able to exist without a progenitor. There would have been no more puppies. That's when I allowed him to love me."
"Love? You can say that there was something wrong with him. I don't believe it.
Wait. Are you saying that his siblings weren't his siblings at all?"
"Yes," nodded the she-wolf, "they were all his children."
"But that means," Kako thought aloud, "we are all inbred? That's why we're dying out?"
"That's right. You may believe me, mother, if I caught him today, then I think I'm going to be sick," the male fox hissed in bewilderment, clenching his fists.
"Joliad, it's over 2,000 years too late for that anyway. But please let me finish."
Joliad nodded and said, "Of course, mother. I'm sorry, but this is a little hard to take in for me right now. A lot of things are only making sense now, and everything I knew about our history seems to have been a lie.
Well, I wanted to give you knowledge, and now you have it. So Banito raped me again and again. At the beginning my body could still fight against it, but at some point it was no longer possible and I became pregnant. Anyway, I was also at peace with it emotionally, because eventually your civilization was going to be built. I began to endure it out of love for my children, whom I then had. That's what I wanted to show you.
For the love of your children, you have.
I just don't believe it, mother," the male ruled.
"You will learn what love means, Joliad. And then you will understand why I acted the way I did. Arya exclaimed now.
Understand, understand. I only ever hear understand from you. Do you understand that you've bred a bunch of cripples with this? And we're all going to die now.
Joliad shouted at her, whereupon she gathered courage to stand up to him.
Stop it! She shouted angrily. Without my decision, you wouldn't be here, and you wouldn't have been able to create such a great world. You will soon have the opportunity to find a solution, Joliad. That's why I'm giving you this information, so I can make amends.
Then the fox became thoughtful and quiet again and asked, What happened to Banato and his children?
My other children drove him to the northeastern edge of the island when they were strong enough to do so. Although he was allowed to keep the Jagrenet Banatarija. She began.
Wait! Shouted Kako, who now understood. That means the wolves have always been in Banatarija?
Yes, now you understand, smiled the she-wolf. He later settled among the Samoydans, produced offspring there as well, and started war again and again to reconquer the continent.
It all makes sense now, mother.
That's terrible.
That's right. However, the gene pool of the wolves is much larger and there is certainly hardly any Aramaran material left in it. It was a mistake to gather all the foxes on this one island. But then I understand now why Aramarans and Samoydans hate each other so much. Now everything he always wanted to know lit up for the male. Actually, there have always been wolves in Aramaria and some of them descended from the same father, Banato. They followed the wish of their forefather and tried to conquer Aramaria. Due to the fact that all foxes lived exclusively on one island, not wanting to mix, their diversity was to become less and less, and they would eventually die out.
Oh damn. I'm so sorry, he apologized insightfully, taking the she-wolf's head between his hands.
Please forgive me for being so snide. Arya grinned and seemed to enjoy the touch.
Briefly, she closed her eyes and Joliad felt that she must have suffered a lot.
It doesn't matter, Joliad. It's good that you can see now. When we restored Ephraim's sight, he also cursed until he realized that all was well, she spoke.
Thank you, mother, for opening my eyes. Now I understand my world much better.
Anyone can open their eyes. But to be able to see as well is one of the great challenges of life.
Don't thank me for that, Joliad, but act accordingly, Arya said, taking her head from his hands.
I have always understood my actions as love, love for all of you as you are now. So, act instinctively out of love, too, and all will be well.
What do you mean?
Why me? Asked the fox, when the she-wolf had already turned around and walked away.
Mother, don't go.
Wait.
He was still shouting when she dissolved and Kakodaz found himself in a vacuum. Everything around him was jet black and he seemed to float.
Where am I?
Arya, where are you?
He called, but no one answered.
Deep, threatening silence surrounded the young male, and he felt an inner dread, when before his eyes suddenly appeared the face of a hybrid, whose species was unknown to him. This creature looked like a changed wolf and had eyes that shone like the resin from the deciduous trees of Aramaria. A smile that seemed more like satisfaction than a friendly gesture crossed the creature's face and Joliad stared stunned as she spoke. Still your heart beats, and only for me, but later it will stop. For soon your spirit will be no more, your body will only grow cold. Was this supposed to be a message or a threat? What did this anthro mean by that? Why had Kakodaz's dream changed so much? But before he could have found an answer to who or what this being was, he noticed that everything turned into white light and his dream ended.